Call the meeting to order, please. If you have a cell phone, please turn it down, stun, turn it off, throw it in the trash can. I don't care what you do with it, I just don't want to hear it for a couple of hours. We have roll call, please.
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Handy Peters, present. Vice Mayor Matusek.
Here.
Mayor Masarzek.
Here.
Councilman Conroy.
Here.
Commissioner Perry.
Here.
Commissioner McGurk.
Here.
Councilmember Taylor. Commissioner Sowers.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Councilwoman Lowe.
Here.
Commissioner Revels. Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Denny's is excused. Councilmember Cusack. Councilmember Lowry. Councilmember Wagner. Mayor Emmett.
Here.
Vice Mayor Rogers. Mayor Jennings. Commissioner Shoup.
Here.
Commissioner Burton. Mayor Gibson.
Here.
Mayor Sal.
Here.
Councilmember Throne. Linda Costello.
Here.
Heather Blank.
Here.
Judy Craig.
Here.
Dustin Savage.
Here.
And we have a quorum.
Thank you. If, when we get to public participation, if anybody's going to be speaking, fill out a participation card. Please stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have any public participation?
Excuse me. The voting member for the Small City Alliance is Commissioner Shoup.
Okay.
The voting member for the Small City Alliance is Commissioner Shoup.
I feel like somebody just short-sheeted me today. This sitting down in a gully.
There we go. There's a lever there. You lift, stand up, and then.
I'll tell you what. When you're 6 feet two and you hit something like that, you really feel short.
I was there.
We don't have any public comment requests this morning. Okay, moving on. We have the consent agenda item. Is there anything that members here wish to pull over? Ms. Matusek?
Item L.
Item L.
Motion to approve the consent agenda as amended. Gilliland.
Have a motion to approve.
Second.
Been seconded. Any discussion, any debate? Without objection, so the motion passes. Let's take up item L. Here.
On item L, and I certainly agree with the feasibility study. We've been, you know, pushing to connect to the coast. The project is about $65,000, and I was just wondering, did we bid that out, or how does that work, and how do we choose what firm if we don't bid it out?
Lois?
The feasibility studies that we do are a part of a continuing services contract for all of our feasibility studies, and we set aside $100,000 a year for the bicycle and pedestrian feasibility studies, and we do as many studies as we can check off the list. Typically, they are in the range of $12,000 to $17,000, but they're generally much smaller projects. In this case, what we've done is we've selected two. There are two separate project requests, but because they form a continuous system, we went ahead and assigned the same consultant to the entire length of those two projects, and they're each a little over $30,000. And some of the reasons behind that are really about the environmental issues and taking a look. They're both going through very wet areas with a lot of drainage issues, and then the New Smyrna Beach piece has some potential for multiple alignments. It's not a very clear singular corridor. And so that has driven the project cost up. I would let you know that County Council has taken a step to go ahead and use ECHO funds to actually fund the construction, which is kind of separate to what we're doing here. If that is the case, and we haven't gotten an update yet, it may be that we don't proceed with the feasibility study. This is a decision that Edgewater and the county will need to make for the Edgewater piece, because once we federalize a project, we have to follow federal standards throughout the entirety of the project. We may not want to do that because that typically will drive a project cost up, but we're still awaiting that final decision, and I wouldn't want to delay their opportunity to move forward with a feasibility study if they want to still pursue this. It's not unheard of to have, or even particularly unusual these days, to have feasibility studies go upwards of $20,000 or $30,000. It just, especially when we're doing a trail through an area that's currently undeveloped.
Any other questions?
Thank you. With that, I approve item L.
Is that a motion to approve it? Okay. We have a motion to approve expenditures for the Coast to Coast Connector Trail and Dale Street to 10th Street Trail Feasibility Study. Any other questions? Any debate? Is there an objection to the motion? Without objection, so the motion passes. Moving item Roman numeral 5A, review and approval of resolution 2015-16 adopting the draft congestion management process, CMP. Lois?
Congestion management plans are required for MPOs or TPOs of our size, and so we've been working through over the last few months with the subcommittee to develop a congestion management plan, and we have Martha Moore from Diabian Associates, and she's here to present that plan. You may recall, we had a month off, so maybe you don't, but in June we actually talked about the CMP, and now we're bringing it back for final adoption.
You're recognized, Ms. Moore.
Thank you very much. Michael Moore, Yabian Associates. I did present to you back in June the congestion management process that we have developed for the River Mississippi TPO. Just as a quick cliff notes to remind you, the CMP is a way that the TPO will be able to measure if the improvements that we're doing under the long-range plan and the work program are actually making a difference. Are they reducing the number of crashes? Is congestion getting better? Are the travel times getting lower? And so the congestion management process does set up a flow chart, if you will, a way of data they can measure to see if things are getting better, go in and do this on a biannual basis. The TPO actually had a certification with FHWA last week, and they reviewed this CMP. And so we are presenting that to you today just for your approval. It's going to be a standalone document from the LRTP, referenced to the LRTP, because we certainly anticipate that it's going to be modified throughout the next few years, and so that we wouldn't have to amend the LRTP every time we had to make a change to the CMP. That's why it's going to be pulled out as a standalone document.
Any questions? We'll entertain a motion. Have a motion to approve. Is there
seconded?
Have a motion to approve the review and approval of the approval of resolution 2015 adopting the draft congestion management process. Any debate? Discussion? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, so the motion passes. Item number B, review and approval of resolution 2015-17 supporting a trail crossing and design for the state road 44 bridge replacement over the St. John's River. Lois? It's at.
Okay, so this is a project that is being pursued, and you know, the bridge that's going over spanning State Road, the St. John's River Bridge, there, the White Hare Bridge at State Road 44, was built in 1955. At this point, the design is considered obsolete. It only has 2-foot shoulders. It's very narrow. There's no bicycle or pedestrian access. So the Department of Transportation has been looking at programming a replacement. And each bridge that goes over a water body like that that spans between two jurisdictions typically gets spearheaded or is included in the Transportation Improvement Program for one of those jurisdictions. In this case, this project has been in the TIP for Lake County. So we were contacted several months ago to be informed about the plans to widen the bridge, and our comment was that it needed to have a trail, and a trail wasn't included as a part of the design for the original PD&E that was done on this particular bridge segment. It is not currently identified in the regional trail corridor assessment or any of the trail plans because those are typically 10 or 20-year plans. In this this case, this is a bridge that's going to be in place for 60 years. It's one of the few bridges that goes across the St. John's River. And so the recommendation was to go ahead and include a trail, or at least the width for a trail access for some point in the future. We ran that through both the Bicycle Pedestrian Committee, Citizens Advisory Committee, and the Technical Coordinating Committee, and they all agreed and supported and recommended supporting the resolution. They added barriers separated to that resolution, which is what you see in your packet today. And so we're not proposing how to design this or how to construct it over time, but we are simply saying that we recommend the design include a multi-use trail, barrier-separated multi-use trail.
Commissioner Matusik, you have a question you recognize?
Thank you. The reason this is important, too, is we have the SunRail that's going to be down there. It is part of the larger group. When you start putting the Wakaiva Trail over on the Lake County side, bringing in the Spring to Spring Trail, which is not too far from there. People ride out to the river every day now on Old New York, which is very narrow, no shoulders, no nothing. So this will eventually make a great connection back out to Edstone Park. So I certainly support this. I think it's important, and I think it's great that we were able to get this and see the foresight, because 60 years, we're going through this now with the 1792 bridge. It's going to be hard to retrofit, and this way we can be proactive and really make it work for everybody. But it's going to eventually connect Lake and Volusia down on this end, as well as the 1792 bridge is going to do Seminole Volusia.
Anybody else? It also is where I go to get some of the best fried catfish, cheese grits, and hush puppies that make a train take a dirt road over at Shady Oak Fish Camp.
Amen.
For us, been around the land a long time. It's also called Sloan's.
Sloan's.
But it is good.
With the jackalope.
Yep, with the jackalope. Any other comments? Need a motion?
Move of approval, Matusik.
Second.
We have a motion for approval of Resolution 2015-17 supporting a trail crossing and a design for the State Road 44 bridge replacement over the St. John's River. Any debate? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes. Moving on to item presentations. A, presentation of the draft 2040 long-range transportation plan, LRTP, with consideration of final public comment.
Again, we have Martha Moore, who is the consultant that's been supporting the TPO all along over this almost two-year process. And what is included in your agenda packet, of course, is not the plan, but it is really one of the key elements of the plan, which is the major capacity enhancing project list. We obviously pursue projects that are not included on this list, but those projects are, again, not meeting that definition that we are required to develop cost-feasible elements for, and that is the capacity-enhancing projects. These are the high-dollar projects that are primarily road projects. We still will pursue transit projects, bicycle and pedestrian projects, traffic operations projects, but again, those don't have to specifically be named because they are typically smaller in scope. So Martha's going to go ahead and walk you through the project list that is presented in cost-feasible terms and walk you through that table.
Thank you, Lois. It seems like it's been a very long year and a half or so that I've been coming up here and presenting to you nearly every month. I hope that you'll miss me when I'm gone after the September meeting. But when I last presented to y'all in June, we brought in a project list to you for approval that was our draft cost feasible project list. And while y'all had the summer break in July, we went and conducted public meetings in late July. We had three. One was at Daytona State College, one was at the Sanborn Center in DeLand, and then the third meeting was in Palm Coast at the Hilton. We had very good attendance. A lot of times when we go to these public meetings, we have more consultants than we do constituents. But in this case, we had really many more people from each of the areas. We had about 80 people total. They were very invested in the project list, came out to see what the long-range plan was about and what they could expect. In addition to the public meetings we did, Lois actually went on a couple of radio shows. You were with Big John, I believe, one morning, also WNDB.
Yes.
And so we have gotten some, the public ad went out last Saturday, the legal ad for this LRTP. So we've gotten through that process. What is different about the list that you see in your package is that we went from the current year dollars in the list that you saw in June, and we moved things into a year of expenditure. We have to be able to inflate those current year dollars up to match the year that we anticipate that those funds will be expended. So we're going to put this list up on the screen for everyone. And that first list that is up is the SIS projects, the Strategic Intermodal System projects. These are projects that will be funded with the Department of Transportation. They provide them to us, and the funds as they are. You'll notice that there's no funding, it shows, through 2025. And that's because DOT works on a 10-year plan. Those are projects that are already funded, taken care of. So we start in the year 2025. There's the first four projects. They are part of the I-4 Beyond the Ultimate. And then there are two projects, a State Road 40 and that State Road 100 projects that are being funded by the TPO, moved up in priority using other arterial funds. Could you put the other list up? The other list is the other arterial funded projects. Those we've gone through, we have an estimate in five-year increments that's provided, the revenue estimate by the department, and we have to be able to match the project costs to those years to fit into the funding that's being approved. We work with John Zielinski in District 5, as well as Lois and Gene and I, to be able to try to slot these projects into those five-year increments and come up with this priority list. So if y'all have any questions about it, I'd certainly be happy to answer.
Any questions? Yes, Commissioner Saylor.
Okay. Now, I think I understand what I want to ask, but I just need to make sure I'm still on track with it. The Rhode Island to Normandy, which is actually part of the ultimate I-4, is on here. Now, the funding from that is going to be two different areas. So that's the reason I just kind of wondered, is it going to wind up showing in two places or just here?
Wait, I'm not sure when you say wind up in two places. What we have to do with the long-range plan is show the projects that we think we can afford based on the revenue estimates available. And so we put together this plan, and we show what we need, and we show what we can pay for. And these lists here show what we can pay for. And that is based on the fact that the DOT has included that as a part of the I-4 Ultimate. So it is included on our list of priorities, and it is included as a part of the cost-feasible plan, which means the DOT can proceed forward with that project. So if you're questioning whether it would happen outside of the Ultimate, is that...
No, you basically got me back to what I thought that was going on, but when I seen it here, I just wanted to make sure that I was still thinking right, because Mayor Masarczyk over there and I have both been very interested in this project for a long time.
Yeah, and I appreciate the follow-up questions, because the reality is it these are fairly straightforward lists when you look at them now, but getting to this point is complicated, and understanding where the funds come from, and that's what Martha was trying to point out is... You know, everybody would like their project built within the first 10 years, but the reality is money comes in streaming over time. So we have to put together a plan that is reasonable and stages those projects and phases of projects over time.
Mayor Masarczyk,
no, funding is in place for all of these projects. These are the cost-feasible projects. There are projects that we've identified as needed that aren't currently funded. And then there are also projects that make up the entire transportation improvement network that would be funded with local funds. So there is also county road projects that are funded. Yes, it's paid for.
Well, bottom line comes down to the fact that everybody sitting at this table understands the Sunshine Law. I can't go over there and talk to him about these things. So if I ask the question, we've talked.
Well, and again, what is I think really different about this long-range plan that hasn't been done before is we've funded some local road projects with the money that's available to this area, and we haven't done that before. So that's allowed us to advance some projects that might have been difficult to pay for otherwise. We've also set aside some money for what we're calling local initiatives. These are improving the quality of our transportation network, but they're not necessarily what we call capacity enhancing. So we can use them for major ITS projects. We can use them for complete streets retrofits. We can use them for roundabouts or other aesthetic amenities that we want to start to include in our systems that we haven't really been able to fund before because the capacity demands were so great. You know, it might be the silver lining to the slowdown in the economy is that we don't have that growth in demand that had been anticipated. It allows us to use the money a little differently than we had in the past.
Commissioner Gilliam?
Lois, just to follow up, you mentioned that obviously we're looking at the funded projects here, but on the unfunded list, projects that we know are coming up that we haven't identified funding for, my LPGA 95 interchange is on that list.
Yeah, we have three I-95 interchange projects on that list, US 1, LPGA, and State Road 44. And again, those are currently a part of an analysis that DOT is doing. In all likelihood, there will be some follow-up work that is required to really nail down. But we have those on the needs list, and they are signaling to DOT that as they continue to update their cost-feasible SIS plan, we want them to move those into. Those are our priorities and needs in this area.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, and a point of clarification, Mr. John's show is in the afternoon and not in the morning. I didn't want him to have to jump up and come up here and correct us on that one. All right. Okay, moving on. You're out of order. Anything else? Okay. Move on to the main event, item B. Presentation of I-95 to State Road 417 sketch analysis and proposed scope. This one has caught everybody's attention. It's good to see Barbara Davis here. Barbara was the Lois Bolenbeck, my executive director back when I chaired the old MPO back in 1996 and 97. So pleasure to have you here today, Barbara.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. And good morning to all of you, members of the TPO board. As Mr. Patterson said, my name is Barbara Davis. Can you hear me?
No.
I'm the program manager for traffic and revenue studies at Florida's Turnpike Enterprise, and I'm very happy to be here this morning to present to you the findings of a sketch-level traffic and revenue study that we performed on the State Road 417 extension project. And before I get started, I'd like to introduce the members of my team that came with me this morning. Allison Stettner is the Turnpike Planning Manager. Martin Horowitz is the Turnpike Environmental Administrator. Josiah Bennett is our Project Manager, and Justin Hanna is our Project Planner. We're all very happy to be here this morning. As I previously stated, this is a sketch-level evaluation. A sketch-level study is a higher-level study that uses existing data and inputs. And what we did was we actually used this to update a previous study that was conducted on this project back in 2003. That was a full planning-level effort. And what we did was look at the key inputs from that project and determine what has changed in the past 12 years and what is the impact of those changes on traffic and revenue. As part of this study, we also looked at three alternative scenarios that was related to different toll rate, additional access on the project and higher land use associated with new developments. And then we also did an update of the per unit construction costs on the project corridors. And all of this information then allowed us to reassess the project results. And just to give you a quick overview of what this project is, it's a new corridor. It would connect 417 in the Sanford area of Seminole County over to the southwest portion of Volusia County at I-95 in the New Smyrna Beach Edgewater area. The project was evaluated as a new four-lane limited access toll facility. It's approximately 30 miles long, and it could serve as an alternate for trips between Orlando and Volusia. A couple things to keep in mind with this project, I'm sure you all are aware, would require a new crossing over the St. John's River, and it also crosses through that center portion of your county that's a very, very environmentally challenging area of the county. Now, this is a rendering of the study area map. We did not change this from the 2003 study. It shows you that the study area focuses on the northeast portion of Seminole County and extends over to the southern portion of Volusia County. There were three corridors that were evaluated as part of the original study back in 2003. And again, we looked at the exact same three corridors. The primary difference among the three corridors is where the corridor connects on I-95 in Volusia County. On the Seminole County side, the connection point is on the 417 just north of the Lake Jessup Toll Plaza and then just south of the Lake Mary Boulevard exit ramps. In Volusia County, the first corridor connects in the New Smyrna Beach area of 95. The second corridor connects sort of halfway between New Smyrna and Edgewater. And then the third corridor connects at State Road 442 and I-95 in Edgewater. Now here's a summary of the 2003 study results. In the 2003 study, there were four scenarios that were evaluated, and those scenarios were developed by crossing toll collection method with assumption for number of lanes for State Road 415. So for toll collection methods, we looked at cash and SunPass customers or SunPass-only customers, and for number of lanes for 415, it was assumed to be either a four-lane facility or a two-lane facility. And then selecting one alternative that we can use as a basis for comparing to our current study, we selected the SunPass-only alternative with State Road 415 assumed as a two-lane facility. This was the alternative that gave the project the most traffic, assuming State Road 415 as a two-lane facility. And when you do that, when we did that back in 2003, the net present value for the project was approximately $196 million. Net present value is the value of the 30-year revenue stream in today's dollars. And so this gives us a number that then can be compared to project costs. And just a reminder of the project costs for the three corridors in the 2003 study, the costs range from $824 million to $887 million. So when you take the range of net present values and compare them against the range of those project costs, this project ultimately ended up with a project shortfall that ranged from $620 million to $780 million. So for this study, the 2015 study, this is a sketch level update, and these are the major project assumptions that we looked at, evaluated, and then updated accordingly as part of this project, and I will go through each one of these. The first one is population data, and when I say population data, I mean the population data that goes into the travel demand model. And what you have here in this summary is a table that shows the 2003 model versus our 2015 model for the years 2010 and 2030, and these are Bieber median population estimates. With the exception of our current model, our 2015 model, for 2010 we actually have actual census data. And when you compare these two model data sets, you can see that there's actually a reduction in population shown in the travel demand models in the current model, and that's reasonable and to be expected. The 2003 model was a pre-recession model. We all know that back in those days that models were over-projecting growth in population and that those numbers weren't really realized. And so there is an adjustment and some slightly lower numbers that we're seeing with our current model. And you can see for Volusia County, for example, if you compare the 2010 Beaver medium estimates versus the census data for 2010, it's a 4% decrease in Volusia County population. Now, the roadway network is another big element that we updated as part of this study. This includes all the assumptions for planned and program projects of the major facilities in the project area. And the list that I'm showing there are some of the major roadways. Of course, there were other updates that we did in the travel demand model as well. It's very, very important to make sure that you have all these facilities properly coded into the travel demand model, because these facilities can either compete for traffic with the project or they can actually be loading traffic onto the project. So it's very important to get these correct. A couple of things that I want to point out from the 2003 study. Of course, there's been, as you all know, a lot of improvements on these roadways in this area, many changes since 2003. When the project was studied back in 2003, Lake Mary Boulevard did not connect to 415. It does now. And so with that connection, you actually have a parallel competing facility. As you can see, 415 is shown in teal and brown on the figure there. And we assumed 415 as a four-lane facility from the Seminole County line up to Acorn Lake, and then a two-lane facility from Acorn Lake to State Road 44. But that is a parallel competing facility with this project, and of course it's not a toll road. Another thing that we looked at with regards to State Road 415, because it is parallel to where this project would go, we wanted to take a quick look at historic traffic data for the corridor. So this is corridor traffic from State Road 46 and Seminole County line to State Road 44, and this shows 15 years of traffic. And as you can see, traffic numbers have remained pretty stable for the last 15 years at about 12,000 cars a day. These are the access locations that were looked at in the 2003 study. And for our base case scenario for our current study in 2015, we looked at these same locations. As an alternate scenario, we also evaluated the project with a full interchange at State Road 46 and a full interchange at Lake Mary Boulevard. There have been two rather large developments that have come online since this project was looked at back in 2003. So we did collect information on the two developments, we evaluated that, and we did run a scenario with these with higher land use generated from these two developments. And all this information takes us up to our base case scenario for our 2015 study to compare back to the 2003 study. So what we assumed for our base case for this study was we ran the same toll rate as the 2003 study, the same access points. We updated our travel demand model, as I described, with the population data and the updated roadway network. We had to adjust our opening year because the 2003 study assumed a 2010 opening year. So we assumed a 2025 opening year for this study. And with regards to assumption for toll rate increases, this study assumes an annual increase with CPI, and that's per Florida statute, versus a toll rate increase every 10 years, which was assumed in the previous study. So when you run the scenario with all those assumptions built in, you can see that the base case scenario for the sketch level study gave us a net present value of $260 million. So comparing back to the $196 million from the 2003 study, there's about a 32% increase in revenues. Now, these are the results of the additional alternatives that I described to you as well. We ran three additional alternatives, and we ran each one of these at the same higher toll rate. The first additional alternative had the same access points as the 2003 study. The second one had assumed a full interchange at State Road 46 and at Lake Mary Boulevard. And then the third scenario assumed higher land use related to Farmington and restoration. And you can see with each one of these, you have even more revenues with the additional scenarios. But the other side of the equation is looking at the project costs, because we have to compare the net present values to the project costs. So we also performed, as part of this sketch level study, a partial update to project costs. We updated the per unit construction costs for each of the three corridors. And when we did that, the this table actually summarizes the 2003 costs versus the 2015 project costs. And you can see overall project costs increased quite a bit as well. And the new project costs now range from $1.3 billion to $1.5 billion. So when we put the project costs together against our net present values from our 2015 study, you can see that the project still has a high shortfall. It's an even higher shortfall now. What we did in this case was just compare to the lowest cost corridor, which was $1.3 billion, against each of the three net present value amounts that we got from each of the scenarios. So just to sum up, we updated and evaluated the major assumptions from the 2003 study. We looked at three additional alternatives, which did generate higher revenue for this project. We did a partial update of the project costs, and project costs are still very high, very large component of this project. And overall, the project still has a very significant shortfall.
This is it as a toll road. I mean, it doesn't have to be a toll road from what I understand. I got a message from Congressman Micah's office that it doesn't have to be a toll road. I understand that. But the cost would be the same whether, if it was a toll road, we've got some revenue coming in. If it's not a toll road, you're eating, what, $1.4, $1.3 billion dollars to build it, I guess. But that doesn't take into consideration land purchasing, correct?
Let me go back to those costs. That is correct, Chairman Patterson. The only thing that we updated for this study, because we did a sketch level study to get to our answers more quickly for you, was we updated the per unit construction cost. So you would still need to look at the cost of right-of-way and environmental mitigation. So these numbers would likely be higher.
So the $719,000 that's available that could be used to determine those kind of costs?
Yes, sir. I think that would be a good idea to maybe look into project costs in a little bit more detail. Perhaps look into the corridor itself and how you would get the corridor through that environmentally challenging area, or look at access for the project and connection points, all of those things. Our study looks at traffic and revenue. It doesn't look at the corridor itself. And we had to assume a corridor for our study, but certainly having more details about the corridor itself could be very helpful to you.
Okay. I just want to mention Barry Cotton from Congressman Mike's office is here today. Are you still here, Barry? Oh, okay. Just want to recognize that he's here. Lois?
So I think part of, and I want to appreciate, show my thanks to the Florida's Turnpike and to Barbara for doing this, at least initial evaluation. You know, part of what has been discussed is let's access the money that's available and do some follow-up study activity. And I think in terms of the trips, the demand, and the revenue, it's pretty clear where it stands. You're absolutely right. The only requirement, as I understand it, is that the endpoints be 95 and 417. doesn't require it to be limited access, but I think because of the environmental sensitivity, that has been strongly considered, it doesn't have to be a toll road. But because of the expense, it seems like it would be likely that we would need some tolling to offset costs. But that is not a requirement. But obviously, the analysis just looks different. There's probably some adjustments to cost, but because we wouldn't have to put in the tolling facilities, but you would lose a considerable amount of revenue associated with it. You know, we're also limited when we do studies like this to the time horizon that we typically look at, which is a 20-year time horizon. So, you know, it may be that this particular project extends beyond the 20-year horizon. But I think a part of what we talked about in looking at the sketch level result is, okay, so what else would we be able to do to further evaluate the project? And I think that's what Barbara was just trying to say, is maybe looking at access points, alignment, environmental considerations would be something that could be looked at if there was a desire to look any further. But that would have to be in the context of the revenue.
Commissioner Long?
Yeah, I just have two questions. I'm really concerned about the environmental impact of these corridors. As far as your personal opinion, I realize the research has not been thoroughly done, but between Corridor 1, 2, and 3, which one do you believe would have the least environmental impact on the sensitive lands?
I'm sorry, ma'am. I don't know. We didn't look at the corridors for environmental in environmental context. And actually, that's not really my area of expertise. And okay. I honestly don't have an answer for you. Know that we really
I don't think there's enough information available
today to
even make a guess at that, but that's again a part of what we discussed is
what's the impact.
Would the board like to access that funding and look at the environmental considerations in greater detail? It is a limited amount of money, so whatever we do, if we access it, we'd have to again come up with a more detailed scope. It is in no way going to answer all of the questions.
And I also just wanted to ask your opinion with the restoration and Farmington developments, as far as what we now have, or if we can expand on the road access that we now have to these developments, would these corridors be absolutely necessary, or do you think we could actually have access to the restoration and Farmington traffic without having a, you know, development through environmentally sensitive land? So that's my question.
I think both of those projects were approved with existing transportation that did not contemplate this particular connection.
Okay, it's good. So these may not be needed.
Commissioner Tusick.
Thank you.
You know, I know one of the reasons for looking at this was, you know, bringing more tourists into Volusia and all, but it also works the other way. I mean, this goes directly to the Sanford Airport. So what will that do to the Daytona Airport for the people that are there on the south end, having direct access and quick access over to Sanford Airport and not accessing the Daytona Airport? So it's more than just getting the tourists quicker to our beach instead of down the 528 to Cocoa. There are some other economic development issues, I think, that it may play issue too as well.
Commissioner Ford.
Is the $700,000 available for other projects, other feasibility projects?
No, it is earmarked for this project.
It's earmarked for this.
Commissioner Saylor.
Okay, now, when this subject came up once before, one of the key things that was brought up that I understood was by a neighbor here worrying about hurricane evacuation routes. So how is that going to be? That's when we need to look at another look at it, because there's nothing on that corridor that you have there that ties into Deltona. So, you know, when we're looking farther down the line, I think that that's a subject we need to approach too, rather than a toll road.
Well, and I want to make clear that we also, if you look back to the long range plan, a project that has been contemplated over the years is an extension of State Road 442 from its existing terminus in Edgewater out to 415, and eventually from there, probably further to the west. We have included a PD&E in our long range plan for that project to start to look at that in greater detail. And so that is in the same area. It would probably somehow affect the future of this particular recommendation going forward, but we are looking at that extension as well.
Mayor Misasik.
Yeah, I just wanted to share, I think Lois is right on track. Our intent, what the allowable study money or money useful for the study is where the rub is, but these should parallel one another because anything, and Ms. Long brought up, any environmental impact it'll just go wild if we don't plan these at the same time. If this project ever comes to fruition where they're going to build it, it needs to be done in coordination with the planning on that access for evacuation routes, because if you don't, you're going to have multiple projects competing for that very sensitive corridor. So there needs to be a corridor established. I would think a corridor established from the east side to the west for the evacuation, and then make sure that this project follows that corridor as it's identified. Because, I mean, eventually it's going to happen along. Ron and I will be gone by then. But anyway, or I will be, Ron will still be around as he goes there. But I'm just saying that we need to do a corridor, environmental corridors, and somebody should identify that, because we need to keep those roads in that one environmental sense. If we're going to go in there and destroy the environment, and there was somewhat, we hate to use that word, but impact, I guess is a better word, probably try to impact the least amount by planning both roads through that corridor.
Lois, you think, I'm sorry, maybe if we had, since we have the availability of this money for that kind of project, to take into consideration some of the issues that are being brought up here and bring in somebody to do the impact, the environmental impacts, as well as the point locations or whatever on that. I think that would be in order if...
Right, and Farmington's already got, a futuristic plan of what they're going to do out there, too. They need to be aware of this because it impacts their roadway.
Yeah, certainly, and through the course of these discussions, we have been in contact with some of their representatives as well, and you can imagine that they are supportive of this. It's of great interest to them and their project. Just to be clear, the timing of this, because we wanted to bring it back to the board as quickly as possible, this hasn't been presented to the technical committee or the citizens committee. We will follow up and make sure that they get the full presentation next month, so that your citizen representatives and your technical representatives get the benefit of grilling Barbara as well. But really, I think we wanted to bring back at least the initial analysis and try to get some feedback. Do we, at this point, are you interested in having a scope developed that looks at environmental, that looks at access points? And if that's the case, we'll go ahead and start to work on that and bring something back so that you can get a better sense of how we would be spending this money if accessed. Clearly, because of the sensitivity and because of the prior study that was done, we would require a public outreach component that is pretty robust, as they like to say.
Commissioner Ford?
Yeah. Perhaps I'm in a grim mood this morning because last night was a budget meeting. As you know, Port Orange has begun to experience traffic problems, and the traffic problems around the county are considerable. And I think there are so many much higher level needs in this county that this road for several reasons. One, it will be a competitor for other financing in the county, and it's going to be a guerrilla competitor. It's a big bucks to build it. The justification, it seems, is extremely limited. And probably the most damning is what it's going to do to the environment in a very sensitive area. Any road, major road, going through those type of environments, no matter what you do, is going to have a negative impact. And I would urge us, given the recent stock market and all the other concerns with the economy, that we take, in this case, we have a pretty easy solution. Simply say no, we're not interested in this period. Looking at all the figures I've seen, it does not seem to have the type of merit that either addresses the problems it's going to solve with the environment and the cost. Given we have so many other competing costs, I certainly would consider this if we had nothing else to consider. But I can tell you, I can spend that $1.5 billion right a little further north with all sorts of immediate traffic problems. So I would consider this, and I thank you for what you've done, because you really have clarified that this is not something we should really rush into. It has significant problems. I think we've been sent a warning by this initial analysis. I think we ought to heed that warning and just back out of this.
Is that a motion?
I make that motion. Yes.
I second.
I have a motion to not move on with this project in a second. Is there any debate? Mr. Matusik?
Question. If that $700,000, if we looked at the environment, I think what Mayor Masarczyk was saying too makes sense, that there's somewhere going to have to be a connection over. If we could use that to look at this, would that align with the other, where we wouldn't have to necessarily pay for the alignment from the east to the west?
We still have, as part of our cost feasible plan, a PD&E, a full PD&E for the State Road 442 extension. It doesn't, obviously on the east end, it is where the existing terminus is. It doesn't begin to identify with clarity at this point where the terminus would be or the junction would be with 415. There are environmental considerations, there are traffic considerations that would have to come in and be evaluated fully. So does this help with that?
We do have a motion on the floor, so let's leave it the debate on that particular issue. If the motion fails, then we can look at other alternatives here. Mayor Matarczyk?
Yes, Chairman. I'm not going to support the motion because I think the opportunity and so idea was brought because of the available funds for planning, which is what we're all about. This planning and the requirements were 417 to 95. Part of that, someone's going to go through that environmentally sensitive area. We have money now that we can use to look at and possibly alleviate some of the fears Mr. Ford and Ms. Long have on that environmental area with this money. Whether we build that extension or not, or just the 442 over to 415, is a question for later. We can decide then whether we want to spend money on that. We're still going to impact that environmental sensitive area at some time because we have to have that extension. 44 right now, I don't want to speak for Galena and New Smyrna, but that section is, go there on the weekends, try to get to the beach on the weekends. It's terrible. We've got to have another access point in case for the hurricane from the southern end of Volusia County over to the west side where all of your evacuation centers are located. And we've been lulled in this sense of, you know, nothing's going to happen for a lot of years, but many of us here still remember 04 and the mess that was there. I remember going from shelter to shelter trying to find different things for different people. It's crazy, and trying to get them to find the area. So I think we should not just kick this to the curb. We may not be able to build it, but at least we can get the out of that study could come the investigation on the environmental sensitive area.
Commissioner Conroy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to take a long time, but as the mayor from Deltona has said, it just makes good sense to look at that area, because eventually we will be maybe have projects in that area. It just makes sense. We're a planning organization. There's money on the table. We shouldn't leave it there because somebody else will snatch it up. And it's just a smart thing to do. Thank you.
Anybody else? I think Mr. Gibson? Yeah, Mayor Gibson. I can't read that sideways that far away.
this body right here looks into the future. And something that struck me, we've been working with Farmington, referenced the evacuation route using Maytown Road. I'm looking at restoration in Farmington's estimate. They're talking about having 23,000 residential units in Farmington alone. And I think it's time to look at what is the least environmentally sensitive route. That's my opinion. And if you take restoration, that's another 8,500. With the roads that we now have today, just imagine flooding those roads with that many cars, additional cars. So to me, this board needs to think ahead. And like the mayor just said, he probably won't be here, and I know I probably won't either when this actually happens. But I think the money should be spent for an environmental study as to what corridor is the least impact. I mean, no matter what you do, you're going to have impact, as it's been stated here. So I think the money should be spent on a study.
Okay, Commissioner McGurk.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd just like to support what's already been said, that I think planning is important. Southeast Volusia, moving west across the county, very important area to plan for and determine. We've got a lot of development coming in there. And I understand the concern about developing in sensitive environmental areas. There's ways to build roads. I look at Alligator Alley across the southern portion of the state that links the east and west side. I've traveled that my entire life, and there's ways to deal with that. I've looked at, you know, that was the concern for not developing 442 out to 415 over the last two decades. And unfortunately, now we're behind the eight ball in terms of future planning. To go down to continue the process of building out and developing homes in areas and not having the infrastructure in place is my primary concern. That doesn't work well. And I'd like to get out ahead of this, and I hope Southeast Volusia could, and moving west across the county in this area. So I think that any planning we can do, whether we go with it in the long run or don't, at least let's analyze it, take a look at it. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Gillian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's not forget that the results of this study will give us nothing actionable. It's a $3 or $4 million sort of PD&E that has to be done. So but if we go forward down this path, all we're doing is delaying the process by multiple years with information that we will not be able to use to actually build that connector. I wholly support getting some kind of connection for Southeast Volusia, and I think we need to have a plan, but this is a bad plan. We need to come up with where can we find $3 or $4 million that we need to do it right, and do it right, instead of just throwing away $750,000 today while we're trying to figure out where do we find the $3 or $4 million to actually give us information that we can make a decision from. So I'm going to support Councilman Ford, but I do support everything that's being said from Southeast Volusia and Southwest Volusia about making sure we come up with a plan that we can act upon for making some kind of connection through that area. And it's going to be filling bridges, and it's going to be very dramatic to the environment, but it can be managed. But we need to have the right kind of study to make decisions from. This is not going to give us the information that we need.
Okay, anybody else? Commissioner Ford, you're recognized to close on your motion.
Your thing's still
I'm on. Trying to get this thing done.
Paul said to close. I'm called. Let me put it there.
Okay. We have a motion to not go forward with this project at this time. And we have a second on it. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
No.
Let's roll call. Pretty close. I'd suggest a division. So could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Mayor Sarsen?
No.
Councilman Conway?
No.
Commissioner Curry?
No.
Vice Mayor LaBeouf?
No.
Councilman Fowler?
No.
Commissioner Sowers?
No.
Vice Mayor DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Councilman Long?
Yes.
No.
Councilmember Patterson?
No.
Councilmember Lowry?
No.
Councilmember Cusack?
No.
Commissioner Reynolds?
Yes.
Motion failed.
Motion is lost.
Mr. Chairman, if I could we get the percentages on that?
The yes votes were 35% and the no votes were 57%.
I need some direction here. Anybody have a motion?
It's just a presentation.
It's just a presentation, okay. All right. Mayor Masarczyk, do you want to be recognized?
Yeah, because of the presentation by them, which I appreciated, maybe we should then look to staff and come back with a recommendation on how to proceed with the environmental impact portion of that. We have the corridors established, all those three. Let's take what money we can use, which is within the scope, and do that environmental impact study, which Mr. Ford and Ms. Long are so interested, which I think we all are. That would at least direct the money to a worthwhile purpose rather than the actual construction.
Okay. You have your direction there. Thank you. Ms. Davis, thank you very much. Anybody else? Okay, thank you. Item C, presentation of coast-to-coast option for crossing the St. John's River. And Mr. O'Day, by the way, I need to see you for about 2 minutes after we close down and adjourn here.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Chairman, member of the TPO. I'm Frank O'Day. I'm Director of Transportation Development for the Florida DOT District 5. I also have staff with me today. Joining me is Stephen Buck from our design office. And I'm here to talk to you about the coast-to-coast trail project and some alternatives for getting across the St. John's River Bridge. A lot of you may be aware that last year's legislature authorized the completion, the department to go forward with the completion of a coast-to-coast trail network, which is a 275-mile-long trail connecting the west coast of Florida to the east coast of Florida. And a lot of that trail network runs right through Volusia County. And we have been working over the years with Volusia County on this trail network. When the department took the lead on this project, we discovered there was a few little holes, and one of those holes in this coast-to-coast trail was right at the St. John's River Bridge. So we needed to look at providing a link in that coast-to-coast trail at the St. John's River. So that's the purpose of this discussion. A lot of you are aware that the coast-to-coast trail, there's a trailhead at the Lake Monroe Park that goes through, the trail goes through the Gemini Springs area and then connects to the East Coast. Seminole County has a trail network that basically carries the trail in front of the zoo and stops it right under I-4 at 1792. When we looked at this effort, we really were trying to look at it two ways. Number one, we wanted to get something done relatively quick. The overall goal is to get this coast-to-coast trail network up and running within 5 years. We think that there's going to be some good economic benefit to this to the community. So we were trying to do something quick. With this particular gap there was an opportunity maybe to do something signature at this location because of the crossing of the St. John's River. So the alternatives I'm going to talk about today are kind of two types. One is a two-phased approach that'll allow us to proceed quickly, but later on maybe do something a little more substantive with a signature structure. And then the other alternative is much more practical, but we'll get it done quickly. So alternative one, the discussion there is to, for the northbound 1792 bridge, we would install a barrier wall on the existing bridge and basically take the existing shoulders and lanes and reduce them a little bit to a 4-foot shoulder on the inside, 11-foot lanes, and a 5-foot outside shoulder. And that would allow us to put a 7-foot, 6-inch trail across the bridge. Now, ideally, we want the trail at least 10-foot for the permanent solution, and also 12-foot in areas where we can. But the thought here is that we can't reduce the shoulders on this bridge any further than this, because if you're familiar, there's a curve, and we have sight distance issues if we reduce shoulders any more than this. But the thought is we could get this up implemented pretty quickly and then follow up with one of a couple different options. One option is a signature standalone structure across the St. John's River Bridge, and that would be a pretty substantive structure with the cost of about $6.8 million. That drawing there shows the green line, which would take the path across the St. John's River, basically adjacent to the 1792 bridge. Alternative 1B would be a little more interesting in that we would wait for the construction of the trail across the St. John's River, the permanent construction, until we actually widened I-4. And at that point, when the widening of I-4 occurs, we could actually include a 14-foot wide trail on the I-4 bridge on the side looking over Lake Monroe. There's concerns, obviously, if I'm a trail user, so I understand the concern about having the interstate traffic, but the idea would be that you could install a tall barrier wall that would separate the vehicle traffic from the rail, and then you have the opportunity then for, on the river or the lakeside, potentially using a plexiglass barrier and provide a pretty scenic vista for the people using the trail. And at that option, we have the ability to actually put a 14-foot wide trail. So there's pros and cons to that as well. So that would be about a $2.5 million cost for that. And again, the permanent solution there wouldn't happen until we actually do the widening for the St. John's River Bridge when the managed lanes come through, and there's no timetable on that just yet. This drawing just kind of depicts that trail where we would put the widened trail, that we would widen the bridge and put the trail on the Lake Monroe side of the bridge. The construction extra cost of that would be about $2.5 million. And that's only construction costs. It's not taking into account maintenance, et cetera. Finally, the last alternative is to do a more significant rehabilitation to the St. John's River Bridge at 1792 and actually move both barriers. Move the current center barrier over to the west, reduce the shoulders and the lanes for both directions, and we've determined that if we do that, we could install a 10-foot trail on the 1792 bridge across the St. John's River. We would not get a 12-foot trail, but a 10-foot trail would certainly work. The benefits to this option is that we would get in there one time, do it once, and be done, and the construction costs for that are $3 million. So what we have here is a table that summarizes those options. The two-phase construction is the approach where we could do something relatively quickly on the 1792 bridge and then spend about $1.1 million and then follow up later with either a standalone structure or a widened I-4 bridge. And the total costs for those construction costs are included. $7.9 million for a standalone structure at 1792. Or about $3.6 million if we included the trail along the I-4 bridge. If we go with one-phase construction, we could have that done relatively quickly, and the total cost for that would be about $3 million. Now, in talking with various folks, Volusia County staff in particular, they're very supportive of the one-phase construction because of the issue with long-term maintenance. the concern on either of the two-phase options is that someone would have to commit to taking care of those structures for a long period of time. Of course, if the structure was along I-4, the department would take the responsibility for maintaining that along with the I-4 bridge. So those were the options for consideration. At this point, it's not an action item, but I'd be happy to take any questions and as we make our decisions to move forward.
Commissioner Matusik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for continuing this to this meeting, as I wasn't able to be at the June meeting. And my concerns of putting the trail on I-4 are several. One, because of where it is and the traffic, and I understand the taller bridge, but it also would, if that would be designated, that would take away all of the DeBerry, Gemini Springs, and back around if we designate the I-4 as the spring-to-spring trail. And that has not been the plan that we have had at all for any of these years. It's always been to connect at 1792, both for Seminole County and Volusia County, and all of the plans that have been made since the inception of this coast-to-coast connector. So whichever item it ends up to be, I think it needs to include 1792. And I do appreciate DOT, coming back with an alternative and less expensive and looking at doing something that's already in the plan to add to it. And normally, on a normal project, that would be a good thing. But I just don't think it's going to be good, at least for Volusia County, especially the southwest side, to use I-4 as the designated coast-to-coast connector. It's not as scenic. There's really no facilities through there. As we all know, how many times have you been stuck on I-4 because of crashes there on the bridge? Not necessarily that would affect the trail, but that's just more traffic and other concerns to add. So I would support anything that would use the 1792, as that's always been the original plan. And I'm okay with the alternative too as well. Building a separate bridge like Seminole County has done over I-4 would really be great. I just don't think we have the money now to do that. That bridge isn't going to go away anytime soon, so we need to make something to work there at 1792. And then when they rebuild the bridge, we'll know that trail is there, and we'll be able to go ahead and add to that. I don't want to be in the same boat we'd be in with 44, which was why we looked at supporting that.
Commissioner Revels.
Yes, and I support the comments that were just made. I just returned from a week's bike trip in the Netherlands, out of Amsterdam through over to Belgium, and the Netherlands takes their bike routes very seriously. And one time there was a bridge closed that forced us to use a traffic pattern along an interstate that was just about the worst thing we had to encounter. And so for tourism purposes, if you can keep it off of a major highway such as that, it certainly would benefit us to do that. So I support the comments. Thanks.
Now that she's bragging about where she was this summer. Judy Craig, please.
I want to thank Chairman Patterson for appointing me to the CAC, and now we're chair together. During our conversation in our CAC, it was strongly felt that going over I-4 was very dangerous. They also felt that, again, the scenic part would be the 1792. And it was pretty much, we didn't have to, I think, make a recommendation, but I know from speaking with them that the I-4 plan is not what they look forward to having done.
Okay. Commissioner Andy Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, support the alternate two and the comments that everyone has said.
Commissioner Saylor?
I have to agree with the I-4 being a beautiful view across that lake. But I also drive that I-4 enough to know that any excuse for people looking to see what's going on is asking for an accident. And so therefore, the I-4 method don't go. It looks like it's a safety thing to me.
Okay, Lois?
Just quickly, I want to, again, express my appreciation to the department. I think early on in the conversations, there was a thought that we wouldn't be able to get a 10-foot segment on 1792. And so the department was looking for reasonable alternatives, and I really want to commend them for at least thinking outside the box and looking at other options. But I think in early conversations hearing that there was a high level of discomfort with I-4, they went back and looked at 1792. So again, I want to just express my appreciation for that. Continue listening to everybody and coming up with a solution.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. Just want to mention Florida Transportation Builder. I don't know how many of you get the magazine, but it's got FDOT turns 100. I'm going to leave this here, but it's kind of an interesting article about from day one to 100 years later on the Department of Transportation. So I found it quite interesting as a history type person. I was fascinated with.
You've been here the whole time.
Huh?
The whole time.
Yeah, you and I, too. We have the shiny head to prove it, too.
That's from biking across I-4.
Okay. Moving on to item D, presentation of draft Flagler County Transit Development Plan, TDP.
Yeah, this is really a pretty exciting opportunity for the folks in Flagler County and for Flagler County Public Transit. They've been working with the Center for Urban Transportation Research out of the University of South Florida to develop a transit development plan. And of course, we've reviewed transit development plans that VOTRAN has developed for years. Now that we have an expanded planning area and a TDP being developed for the Flagler folks, we wanted to bring it here and start talking about where they're headed with their public transportation. We have Rob Gregg here from Cutter.
You recognize Mr. Gregg.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Cutter is indeed working for Flagler County to put their first TDP together. And what's unique in this TDP is Flagler's had the foresight to be working on this for several years. It usually takes about a year to put a TDP together, but it is a required document. I will be moving at the speed of sound in order to be concise and recognizing that you have the PowerPoint in your package. So I'll be using my PowerPoint maybe to illustrate some significant points. The clear objective of this study is to enhance and develop public transportation in Flagler County, and most significantly to meet the requirements of Florida statutes in order to access additional funding that's available to Flagler County. With the 2010 census, which just seemed like it was around the corner coming into play, Flagler had been working toward recognizing perhaps being part of an urbanized area or an urbanized area in itself. We now know that it's part of the larger urbanized area, and in becoming urbanized, it lost rural funding that was originally available to them and now has available to them urbanized federal funds and block grant funds from FDOT. FDOT recognized what was happening and in fact came to the support of Flagler County in the previous studies that were being done that we're now collecting into a formal TDP. So this TDP, most importantly, establishes eligibility, prioritizes transit improvements for Flagler County, and we've become a part of the fold of the region and the TPO in dealing with overall mobility service issues. One other significant aspect of this TDP and the overall process is a relationship with the federal government. So in coordination with VOTRAN and TPO staff, Flagler County will be the second designated recipient of FTA funds. Major elements of the TDP, you could take a look at the boxes yourself, but over the past few years, we've been collecting socioeconomic data, public outreach, information of specifically required elements that are formal in a TDP document as prescribed by FDOT. Significant to all of that is us capturing what is relevant to the local community and the region as far as access to jobs, access to social services, economic development as such. The partnership that has evolved in putting this TDP includes an advisory review committee of MPO staff, of course, the local governments within Flagler County, and other important agencies as we developed the priorities for Flagler County. Public involvement, again, has not just been the past few months, although we've had some recent public workshop that I'll talk about in a second. But over the years, it's included, again, advisory committees, intergovernmental coordination, and outreach to understand what the public's needs are and perceptions are. In doing so, we've got a sense in the TDP of what are the demands, what are the perceptions, what are the needs. As most of you know, Flagler County has a service that is highly oriented towards seniors and persons with disabilities. The TDP that we've put together keeps a focus on that and maintaining that system, but then starts to take a look at other opportunities such as job access, younger markets to serve, and again, some new types of services that, again, I'll mention in a moment. We come off of, last week, we presented this information to your citizens group and your technical committee. We've had two workshops most recently in Flagler County, County to receive input. In fact, that input has us modified when to implement new types of services. Very quickly, what guides us through the development of the services, very specific goals and missions, and again, you can read those as part of your package. But the focus starts to look at land use development. An issue is how to access maybe fixed route public transportation as we move into the future, looking at facilities, looking at prudent use of federal, local, and state funds. We went through a process that, again, is required by FDOT, a modeling process, as well as taking a look at who are the existing customers and surveying the existing customers as far as trying to take a look at the development of fixed route services. In doing so, we came up with a number of alternatives, trying to capture as many of the existing riders on the paratransit service to perhaps access new types of services. And we've come up with priorities that looked at three major corridors. In your package, two are cited, one being State Road 100 and Belterra is a corridor for fixed route service. State Road 100 extended out to Flagler Beach, and the corridor that popped up in public involvement was a corridor that was on the Palm Coast Parkway and permeating a little bit further into the northeast portion of Palm Coast, which is now part of the priorities of the plan. Another element of fixed route, beyond fixed route service, is to create some zonal service. So these, if you take a look at the map in your package, we have areas that would evolve with fixed route, and then the fixed route would almost become, in my words, an Uber bus type of service that, based on requests and demand, that route would go into certain areas that are not fixed immediately but can be adjusted as demand occurs for those types of services. So we're here today, again, for an informational item. This TDP will be going to the Board of County Commissioners of Flagler County, as I understand it, in a workshop, and then for a final adoption that is tentatively scheduled for the 9th. I think that's been modified to the week after. That's all I have for you today.
Thank you, Mr. Gregg. Any questions? Lois?
Just one quick comment. The results of this particular transit development plan came a little late in our long-range planning process, but during our long-range plan, some of you may remember that we developed two alternatives, our trend-based alternative and our what-if scenario. And in the what-if scenario, we developed and explored more dense development along transit corridors. And I think that what was developed there in the long-range plan is very consistent with what they identified and what's coming out as a part of the lengthier research that they did that was more transit-specific. And so I think that's good news in that the long-range plan explored things that were very consistent with where they're headed. And I think as we move forward with subsequent plans, both the TDP and the long-range plan, they'll dovetail well into each other. So I just wanted to remind folks how these things fit together.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gregg. Thank you. Next up, item E, Mr. Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Just a few of our major projects we're going to talk about. The 415 from Seminole County Line to Reno. That one is closing in on completion. It should be done early next year in the February-March timeframe. Moving on down, there's I-4 from 44 to just east of I-95. That project we have currently set up for a completion date next April and May. And then we go on to the TED bridge overpass of US 92. I'm sure you all saw in the news, if you didn't experience it directly, that the bridge structure itself has been placed over the roadway. That was just the issue of getting everything finalized on that structure. And then completing a few of the other landscaping details. For the time being, sometime very early next year, that project should be complete. Moving on down, we've got the system interchange I-4 and I-95 and US 92. That project is at an earlier stage of development, but right now we're looking at a completion date either in late 2017 or early 2018. And then for the major projects, the last one I really have, the next last one, is US 92 from Pomoca Farms Road to Beach Street. So that one is estimated to be complete in fall of this year. That's an adaptive signals project. There is one more project I just wanted to note for you. It's the last one of my structural reports. That was the 472 and 1792 interchange. Work that's going on the south side of the land. That project is roughly a third of the way done. We've got an estimated completion date of July 2017, so sometime in the summer of 2017 we would expect that project to be in a wrap-up phase. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Ferguson. Lois, Executive Director's report.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief.
Everybody's packing right now.
I just wanted to mention quickly and introduce you to two new staff members that we've brought on board, Artie Sharma, and Vince Wang. Vince is a transit planner, going to be working closely with Flagler County as well as VOTRAN. Artie is a numbers person, and she's going to be doing a lot of GIS work and the congestion management system we've been talking about. You'll probably be seeing in the news, if you haven't already, transportation reauthorization. It's up in the air about when we will have a new bill and how long that bill will last. The good news, though, is that we have funding currently authorized through the end of this year. So even though they're talking about the bill itself and extending the existing bill or reauthorizing, we do have funding secured till the end of the year. We underwent a federal highway certification review 2 weeks ago. That's where Federal Highway and Federal Transit Administration come down and take a look at everything we do. This happens once every 4 years. It is a big and important activity for us. All in all, the visit went very, very well. We've implemented a lot of and updated a lot of plans and programs since their last visit. A report will be coming out in the next few weeks, at least a preliminary report. We'll be sharing that with you all. Just to be clear, they are accepting public comment. We did hold a public meeting while they were here. We had pretty good attendance, and some of our citizen advocates were vocal about what they liked and what they thought we should do better. But they are accepting public comment between now and September 13th. If any of you all want to email them, we'll send that contact information, and you can tell them what a fabulous job I'm doing. And then finally, there is a study that we are looking at through the Central Florida MPO Alliance. And this study would be a regional transit study looking at regional transit, both rail and bus projects over the 9-county DOT district. And we've been talking about that through the alliance and through the representatives of this board that sit on that alliance for a while. At the last meeting, a resolution was passed to go ahead and request that we move forward with a study of this particular 9-county region. And DOT has indicated early on that they would be funding that study. So we're starting to work through a scope of services, and of course we'll bring that back as well for those of you that are interested in regional transit. That's all I have.
Any member comments? Commissioner Saylor?
The subject of utility relocation is going to come up again, and I would like to ask that all the cities look into that closely. Deltona sent a fine example Monday night, coming out totally against it. I'd like to ask all the rest of the cities to take a good look at it, because if you're going to have to pay for somebody to move something every time you turn around that's on your right-of-way, the counties have already came out and opposed it. Your Florida League of Cities, it's on their primary goals of the legislation against it. I would really like to see something from this organization against it also. But I would, from talking to members here today, not everybody's familiar with it. And I'd just like to ask everybody to please get familiar with it, and then let's go from there.
Okay. Any other comments? Mayor Massasi?
I'd just like to add to what Ron said. We were amazed and surprised at the support it got from our local delegation, which is something that's strictly going to attack every city. And if you're not aware of it, you need to get a hold of the information concerning. And it failed this year, but there are active lobbyists by the utilities groups that want to. They're going to bring it up again next year, and there's some strong support to move this along. It will devastate any movements you make in your city, from planting trees to building sidewalks. We're in a big move in our city to put in reuse water lines in the West Volusia area. Newberry, Orange City, and Deltona are working jointly. Well, with Delaney, too. She left already. But you really need to look at if you have it, and it has to do with the utility companies wanting us to pay to move lines in our right-of-ways whenever we do a project. Normally, they would come out and mark them, and then they would move them. Now they want the cities to be responsible for that, for any movement of their utilities in our rights-of-way. So there's some real, you've got to really study the issue of right-of-way and easements, because it's the way it's worded, it could be devastating to a lot of our projects, even bike paths, trails.
Okay, any other comments? All right, seeing nothing else on the agenda, we are adjourned. Thank you.